Good morning. House Transportation Committee comes to order today, April 26, 1999. We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2472. Janet, would you like to review the signature?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning. House Bill 2472 is the bill that you heard on March 3rd, and it would make it illegal to carry an animal on the space intended for carrying the load in the back of a pickup unless the animal is cross-tethered or protected by a container or a tree. It exempts the transportation of livestock or dogs for the purposes associated with ranching or farming. The offense of carrying the animal in the back of a pickup, if it's not protected, would be a Class D traffic infraction, the maximum of $75 fine. We heard testimony from veterinarians and about six other people. This is a bill that Representative Ross sponsored. You heard opposing testimony from Representative Simmons and the Farm Bureau. The Farm Bureau did offer a -1 amendment. If you don't have one in your folders that you brought with you, we do have some extra copies. Mr. Chair, only one other question came up during the hearing, and that was whether it is legal or illegal to carry a person or a child in the back of a pickup, and that is not illegal.
Okay. Committee members. Representative
Mr. Chairman, if you are ready, I will move the -1 amendment.
-1 amendments have been moved. Is there any opposition to the -1?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, clerk, call the roll, please.
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
No.
Representative Scott.
Yes.
Representative Lehman.
Yes.
Representative
Wilson. We didn't have much discussion on this, but right now on this amendment, but I have a little concern about the exemption here. I will vote yes on it, if for it, but I have some concerns about the exemption.
Representative
Taylor?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wells?
Yes.
The -1s are adopted.
Chairman,
yes.
I move House Bill 2472 as amended to the floor to introduce my recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wells.
Are you ready for discussion?
Yes.
Regarding the -1 amendments, we have language not a freeway, and that is really isn't. Too awful clear. We have what's called the interstate system, which is freeways, and we have highways that are limited access, so there could be a little confusion there. For instance, Highway 22 that goes out east, the new highway is limited access, but it's can be construed as a freeway because it is limited access. So I don't know whether that is the best language, and I think the ag community generally supports the -1s, but we're a little concerned about the 5,000. They'd like to have that a little higher, but I'm not going to quibble over the words, but generally the agriculture community does support the exemption of them in this bill. All right, so noted.
Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate to offer a conceptual amendment regarding changing the highway to interstate highway?
Janet?
Mr. Chair, Representative, are you speaking about the line 2 of the -1 amendment?
Yes.
Yes.
That would be all right. Is that interstate highway?
Members of the committee have any further thoughts on adding that?
No,
not. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
members of the committee concur that adding the word interstate is acceptable?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone oppose that?
Are we saying then that, what happens then with that? Does that say that you can have a dog in the back if it's tethered, and if it is, but if it is not tethered, it cannot go on an interstate highway, but it can go on all other highways? So it could go on, Highway 217, or there's lots of traffic, or it could go on 205?
No.
Or not? Is that considered a freeway? What kind of freeway?
This, Madam, Mr. Chair, Representative Wilkins, this is still applying to owners of dogs that are used for ranching and farming.
Right.
And so those people would not be able to transport a dog unless it was tethered. If they were operating on a freeway, but they would be able to on certain roads.
But a freeway then is I-5.
Right, or interstate.
But not 205.
Mm-hmm. 205 is an interstate. Would be an interstate as well.
Just further discussion, I have quite a bit of mail. Probably all of you do. This is from Hillsboro, and that's pretty rural.
Yes.
And,
I resemble that remark.
They're certainly in support of House Bill 2472 without amendment. So, I'd have to be a no on that if we made it that broad on the bill.
All right. Further discussion on this issue? Absolutely.
The whole bill or just this one issue?
Just this one issue, currently.
On the interstate highway.
I might go a little farther here. The interstate means that's part of the interstate system. We have freeways that are not part of the interstate system. So when you put interstate, that means it'd be I-5 or I-84.
Yeah.
So it clarifies what freeways we're talking about there. Is that really all that does? You put interstate in. Because, in a sense, Highway 22, the new section we have that goes throughout the state, and is considered like a freeway. It's limited access, it's overpass, but it's only 55 mile an hour speed limit again, because it's not part of the interstate system. So there is a difference there.
Representative, does that have a federal designation number, like 205, I-5?
No, it's Highway 22. It's a state highway.
Okay.
I guess I don't worry, but it's 55 mile an hour speed limit. We probably get ODOT up here, but it's a different highway than the interstate because the speed limit is 55.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Follow up on that. Then are we saying that on Highway 22 you could have a dog in the back of a pickup that is untethered?
If you're a farmer. That's all this refers to here, is a farmer.
Yeah, so we're not just talking about taking dogs from one field to another or anything like that.
In many cases, you are on that out there by state, and you can be on that road and come and mm-hmm. come down and get off of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not part of the interstate system. This only applies to agriculture operations. Actually, in a sense, Mr. Chair, the Dash 1 amendments really don't change the intent of the bill because it does talk about employed ranching and farming. It just kind of clarifies that language, so it actually doesn't change anything except clarifying, actually tightens it up because, let's see, up in the first section 2 says motor vehicle on a highway.
3B.
As I would understand that, Mr. Chair, that language tightens it up so that even though you're in agriculture, you couldn't haul your dog on an interstate. Where the way the original bill was written, you could haul your dog anywhere if you're in agriculture.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, there is a, is traveling on a highway in a rural area and is traveling to or from.
Okay, yeah, there we have. On highway in a rural area. We basically, we just clarified on which roads. Because otherwise, I said rural area. Some of those interstates are in rural areas, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we have to make a delineation. If we're talking interstate because of that issue, some of those are obviously in rural areas. Either we're going to prohibit it outright, or we're not on an interstate.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the amendment is good because before agriculture could do it, could try to have the dog in anywhere as long as the highway in a rural area, and it doesn't say which highway at all in the original bill. So what we've done is basically say it can't be on the interstate. Let's tighten it up.
Mm-hmm. However, this is the exemption portion. This is the part that
does not apply.
So, I don't, the author is here. She can ask
us. Representative Austin, you come first.
I concur with Representative Wells and Representative Taylor that if we use the word interstate rather than freeway, that that helps to clarify so that it's less ambiguous for law enforcement officers who are trying to deal with this. And also it's clear for the farmer or the agricultural person where they're supposed to be and where they're not. I think that clarifies that. So we support the amendment, and I support Representative Taylor's move to substitute the word interstate for freeway.
Representative Ross, I think the concept was to add the word interstate to the word freeway, not substitute for it. Am I not correct
with the interstate freeway?
I think interstate highway would replace freeway.
Interstate highway?
Mm-hmm. Well.
And I thought this was going to be simple.
Highway. Mr. Chair, you could say interstate freeway if you wanted to, but it's, I don't think you need to. The interstate that you're talking about are the interstate 84, mm-hmm. I-5 and I-205 and I-4 and I-4.
Representative Hill, thank you for waiting patiently.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to ask another question here in terms of, I believe it's something that Devlin's area. I think he has a city called River Grove. The rural population of 5,000 or more?
No, I have a population, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Representative Hill has a population of 320 people. It has no farming, though. So.
It has no farming. So this strategy wanted to clarify. So in River Grove, it would be appropriate to drive around in that community with a dog in the back of a pickup.
If you were a farmer.
I don't believe so.
But it's the opinion of the committee that the proposed amendment, first paragraph B on line 2 of dash loans, I'm not seeing anything in that two lines that specifically excludes farming or dogs used for farming. I think it says the transportation of a dog.
Mr. Chair, that whole paragraph up there is if.
Mm-hmm.
And it relates to the fact
that you're an agricultural representative. Well, that's correct.
So we're talking about the exemption there of where agriculture dogs could be. And if you're in a population less than 5,000, if we had interstate, it couldn't be on an interstate freeway. So that's the two exemptions we currently have.
We have the words interstate freeway, interstate highway. What's the pleasure of the committee? Federal vernacular in the sense you're talking about interstate is highway. So if we just put interstate at highway or freeway, people will know what it is. There's nothing. An interstate,
in all due respect, if we're arguing about the word is and the meaning of it these days in politics,
interstates start with I-5, I-205.
The chair is happy to do whatever the committee's pleasure is. Let me remind you that we're going to get through this thing in about 5 minutes because we have some other very important bills, and we're going to get out of here by 10 o'clock.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Montgomery.
you had six votes before they started talking about amendments. Now I don't have any idea how many.
Mr. Chairman, let's ask the maker of the motion, and I'll go with the maker of the motion, whether she won finally or freeway, and get this out of
Representative. I move a conceptual amendment to House Bill 2472 that would, on line 15, change A to AN and add interstate and leave the word highway.
Is the word freeway?
Line 15 is...
Mr. Chair? It's line 2 of the proposed amendment. Right.
Okay, that, you're saying that actually becomes line 15 after the deletion of 14 through 17? Okay. Did you say interstate highway?
Yes, you did.
Representative.
Okay, interstate highway. We have that accomplished.
Yes. Everyone on the committee are in favor of that? Any objections to that language added conceptually? Representative Pell. Okay.
I'm objecting.
Okay. Representative Wilson, you also objecting to that language?
I'm just objecting to the bill.
You're just objecting to the bill.
All right. I will support the bill, but not with that amendment.
Okay, Brad, would you poll the committee, please?
James, you want to watch?
On
we're voting on an amendment.
The conceptual amendment of adding the word interstate and highway to the dash line.
We're adding the word.
No.
Aye.
Pass for the moment.
He's very wise now.
Aye.
Change my mind, I'm going to vote yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye. Aye.
I'm still not ready. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, is my name Nathan still on?
Yes, it is.
Three Nathan, Chairman. I am moved to HB 2472 to the floor with the due pass recommendation with the dash one amendment and the conceptual amendment as stated.
Motion has been made. Any further discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Representative Lehman and Representative Walker.
Very quickly, I'm going to vote against this bill. And I think, again, it's one of those things we're getting into an area of unneeded legislation. And, you know, we were unwilling last session to restrict children from the back of pickup trucks. And now we're going to protect animals from the back of pickup trucks. And we probably need it even less when you consider there's two classes of people we're trying to protect here. Those falling behind a vehicle that a dog jumps out and they are injured, and there are laws about unsecured loads that you can take from under the vehicle. The other one is if you look at the animal abuse statute from 167, 315 through about 335, there's animal abuse in the first and second degree, which talks about knowingly or recklessly causing physical injury to an animal, and there's neglect, which talks about knowingly or recklessly failing to provide minimum care for an animal. So we have ample means under the statutes now, if law enforcement so decides, to cite people with very serious offenses when their animal jumps out of the back of a vehicle and is either injured or kills themselves. So, I mean, I look at this as another one of those things. We're adding another layer of legislation and regulation that we really don't need. We have ample means there right now if law enforcement has the time and energy to cite people whose animals jump out of the back of vehicles. And now we're going to be asking law enforcement to go out and cite everybody they see that's driving around with an untethered dog. So I just think we're adding things on that probably are unnecessary.
Okay, let me remind the committee that Representative Devlin has to leave in about 1 minute. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really don't like the exemptions for the farmers off of their property. I think once they get out on the highway, they need to tether their dog, but I'm politically aware enough to know that it can come pass. So I'm going to support this and just encourage farmers when they get out there on the highway to tether their dog. I disagree with Representative Lehman. I think we need to prevent dogs from falling off trucks. And I was behind a truck coming up the freeway about 2 weeks ago with two dogs on the back on top of a ledge. And I had another representative in the car with me, and I was ready to call the police on my cell phone, but there's no law against it. But darn it, if we pass this, there is a law, and I can call, and we'll get these people squared away. So I'm in favor of this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion, Representative Loken?
Yeah, I'm in favor of it, too, but I share the concern of Representative Walker.
Okay.
That even if it's a farm dog, a farm animal, if it's on the highway, it's still...
So noted. If there's no further discussion, will the clerk call the roll?
I'll have to vote yes. Somebody went south on him, Mr. Chairman. I don't know who it is if you've got the list. I'll vote yes to the floor, and I'm a firm no on the floor. Is that the roll?
Okay. House Bill 2472, with attached amendments, is hereby moved to the floor with a new pass. Representative Ross? Before you leave, would you like to carry this bill, by the way?
I would be happy.
We would be honored if you would. Thank you very much.
I'm not going to make it to an overwhelming desire.
The chair, we could have a chair for you.
I prefer the chair.
Thank you.
Thank
you. All right, I might remind the members of the committee that we are going to leave here promptly in 1 hour. Let's move into a public hearing. Let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 2199. And Janet, would you give us a lowdown on this one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2199, the bill brought as a request of the Department of Transportation that would increase aviation gas taxes from 3 to 6 cents a gallon on the effective date of the bill, and to 9 cents a gallon on July 1st, 2000. It would also increase the amount withheld for aviation from motor vehicle fuel taxes from 3 to 9 cents on the same schedule. It increases jet fuel tax from 1/2 cent to 1 cent per gallon on the effective date. It dedicates these increased revenues to a program of pavement preservation at public use airports, and specifies that maintenance and preservation projects that are identified in the state's aviation system plan are eligible for funding, and that construction, engineering, and administrative expenses may be funded with increased fees. The project selection process is also specified in the bill, with recommendations from the Aviation Advisory Committee and final approval by the Transportation Commission. Mr. Chair, the bill has a subsequent referral for revenue, and we received a fiscal statement this morning, and I'll be passing that out. It's not at your place. You do have a couple of letters at your place today regarding the bill, and you can read some of the background to see when these, but I think there will also be part of the testimony when these fees were last increased. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Janet. We have four people signed up to testify. Mr. Jerry Dale, is he here? Jerry, why don't you come forward? And is there anyone to testify with you, Jerry?
No, there isn't today.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and come forward. State your name for the record, please. Speak loudly into the...
My name is Jerry Dale. My family owns and operates Sportsman Air Park in Newburgh. And I'm here to speak on behalf of the privately owned public-use airports throughout the state. And... I'm not opposed to the aviation fuel tax increase. What I'm opposed to is the allocation of the funds. And even in the reading, there's confusion of where this money is going to go. And in the reading, Janet read it that it would go to public use airports. And if you read the bill more carefully, it does not. It only goes to publicly owned public use airports. And that is where I have a problem. If we're going to collect a tax from everyone, then we should make everyone eligible to receive funds from that tax. The tax is not for general system purposes. It is there to improve pavements. And our pavement is, I believe, as important as anyone else's pavement, and it's discriminatory in those respects. The privately owned airports that I refer to are the home base for approximately 10% of the aircraft in the state, and so we are a significant factor in the aviation community.
Clarify something for me. Currently, do you get gas tax or aviation tax dollars that goes into your airport?
No. The only way we get any benefit from that is that we are involved, we are eligible for planning, and we are part of the state planning system, and there is a statewide program for pavement maintenance evaluation, and we're involved in that program now, as are most of these, of these, there are 10 significant of the airports like the one that I'm involved with.
I guess the question is that the current money being raised by the Asian fuel tax, we're not changing anything when we do this. We're leaving it the same.
You're leaving that the same, and the way the bill is the increased money is to be dedicated only to pavement maintenance. It's for a specific use.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Representative Montgomery.
Thank you. Do we have signed up the department to comment on this bill?
Department of Aeronautics?
Yes.
Yes. Ann Crook, Ron Larson, would you come forward, please? Say your name, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ann Crook. I'm the interim manager of the Aeronautics Division of Oregon Department of Transportation. I have with me today Ron Larson, who is the chair of our Aviation Advisory Committee. I wanted to today urge your support of House Bill 2199. This bill was developed after several failed attempts at increasing our fuel tax revenues out of a consortium that included our Aviation Advisory Committee and Mr. Larson here, the department, the Port of Portland, other airport managers in the state, representatives of the Oregon Pilots Association, and other members of our aviation community. The bill, as you see before you, would raise roughly $1 million a year. And again, roughly 800,000 of that would come from jet fuel taxes and about the remaining 200,000 from avgas taxes. And that money would be exclusively dedicated to pavement maintenance in the state. I believe when Ms. Atkins read the what the bill would do, she said in there that it would include administrative costs, and I want to clarify that it would. It would include administration only for this pavement maintenance program. So that would be along the lines of letting a contract for someone to do work and those sorts of things. So none of the money would go to general administration of the division or of the department. The last time the jet fuel tax was changed at all was in 1959, and at that point it was cut in half, from 1 cent to a half cent. The last time the avgas tax was changed was in 1977, so it has been over 20 years since we've had an increase in the fuel taxes.
Excuse me, Ann?
Mm-hmm.
How does Oregon compare with other surrounding states in terms of what we're paying, both on Jet A and General Aviation Higher Roll Ed?
Thank you, Representative Strzok and members of the committee. Our fuel tax rates are well below other Western states, and I've got a graphic that I could share with you all about that. Our half-cent jet fuel rate is by far the lowest of any of the states. The 3-cent avgas rate is low. If we raise that to what's recommended in this bill, it would be right in there, though a little bit on the high side of the other Western states. And let me offer this visual that shows
you. Thank you. And in your opinion, do we currently sell quite a bit of fuel from airports that are near our state lines because of cheaper prices in our surrounding states, or do we have overall cheaper prices in our surrounding states?
Chair Krupp, the rates are different at different airports, both in within the state and outside of the state. Most of our fuel is sold, I would say, at bordering states, because that would be at Portland International, which is a borderline state. And that is, obviously, for the most part, jet fuel. And we don't sell that because it's cheaper. We sell that because that's what the airlines need. Though it is cheaper because the jet fuel tax in Oregon is so much cheaper than in other states. I couldn't imagine the airlines having a problem with still paying less in Oregon, though a little bit more than it was previously.
Thank you.
I also just wanted to stress that we have wide support of this program from aviation groups across the state. We have the support of the Oregon Aviation Alliance, which is a group that comprises almost all of the other groups, including the Oregon Airport Management Association, Oregon Pilots Association, Oregon 99, which is a women pilots group, Oregon Flying Farmers, Oregon Antiques Association, and many, many others. That's all that I have for you today, but I would be happy to answer any more questions.
Oh, I do have a question.
Yes,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Cook, could you address Mr. Dale's concern as to why we don't give money to private airports?
Yes, Representative Kruff and Representative Walker. We have the group that I referred to that put together this bill didn't include the privately owned public use airports because there was a little bit of concern about money going to privately owned airports. However, that would certainly be a concept that I would be willing to look at some more. As Mr. Dale mentioned, we're talking about another 10 to 15 airports adding to the eligibility.
Representative Hill and Representative Montgomery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have any idea in terms of the priority list in terms of for these dollars?
Chair Kruff, Representative Hill, we don't have a completed priority list yet because, as mentioned, the list will come out of the work of our aviation plan. I've got a partial list that I would be happy to share with you, but I imagine that within 2 weeks we will have a set list.
Well, yes. So the language of the bill puts priorities based upon pavement condition. And so is the dollars that this would collect is it sufficient to deal with all runways, or do you have any sense in terms of how many years it would take to bring all of the runways up to good or better? Or, I mean, I'm just trying to get some sort of sense of what the scope of this project is.
Chairman Kruff, Representative Hill, I can give you an idea of the scope that right now, if we tried to address all of the pavements that were below fair, we're not talking about good, we would need $15 million. And so this $1 million a year would begin to touch that, but we've got a lot longer to go. I don't have right now how many years it would take us to get up to bringing all the pavements to good, but I can certainly get that for you.
Yes. Thanks, Chair. So, I guess the other question I have is in terms of those airports that, in terms of where planes are paying this, is it an assumption in terms of that Hillsborough Airport, Portland Airport, are they, where the bulk of this gas is going to be sold, or is it equally undisclosed in terms of the distribution is all somewhere else, and those who are paying it, any benefit unless they fly to those other airports?
Chair Kruff, Representative Hill, because of the way the gas tax is collected, which is directly from the distributors, I can't tell you the distribution at airports. I know that the bulk of the jet fuel is pumped at Portland International. But unfortunately, beyond that, I can't tell you the proportions of the different airports throughout the state.
Representative Montgomery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions, and if they're answered properly, I'll be happy. If not, I may have a tire.
You have free reign, sir.
Thank you. No, I don't need that. I received things, a lot of these, in the mail. I know it has the bulk U.S. postage paid, Salem, Oregon, permit number 81. My first question, is this a state permit? The proceeds?
Chair Crop, Representative Montgomery, yes it is.
Okay, so this was mailed out of your office, obviously. Oh, another question. I have two more questions. Oregon Aeronautics Division paid for the postage to use your mailing list for state money to send me, I guess, which I will pass to all the members, these letters to your members, and I don't know who is this mailing this. I have no idea. This letter is addressed to Representative Montgomery and it says, sign your name, and they did. And they did, and they did, and they did. My question, Mr. Chairman, is using state money to lobby for more money for a division. I don't know whether this is illegal or not. I've done some primary checking and found out that it may be legal. It is wrong. It is wrong, and it is wrong. My question is now, if I had the answers I didn't want to hear, may I go on with three more questions? Did you ask anyone at ODOT for permission to do this?
Chair Krupp, Representative Montgomery, I believe that we had implicit approval to do that, though
so let me
there have been some
chairman interruptions. So you asked Grace Krenigan, and she gave you permission to do that. That's question number one. Don't you think this is kind of wrong? Now, if all state departments start doing this, DEQ, when they want an increase on something, all these other divisions. That's why some of my colleagues introduced these laws. This committee has tried its best not to beat up on the Department of Transportation. We haven't. I'm proud of the committee. This is very wrong. And, Mr. Chairman, I want us, this committee, to do something about this. We cannot continue to have state agencies sending out at the expense of the state with some mailing list they have in their office and then harass the legislators with all of this stuff. I don't mind being harassed. I've had plenty of it this session with all kinds of dogs in trucks and old people driving RVs and everything else. This is wrong. And I don't know what else to say about it. I think we need to do something. Using state money to lobby us is not what we're here for. And I guarantee you, I've been on the other side, but I'm falling over here. And if we don't do something about this, this bill's dead. I'm a no on this. There's no way I'd support something like this. You just can't do that. End of my speech, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the tirade. It's the first one I've had this session.
Point well taken, Representative Crummell. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought we were going to get through here with only one question about... That is a criticism, and because of all of the information I've gotten has been very positive. But I wanted to ask, with regards to the use of consultants for looking at base leases and leases in general and raw land leases and that sort of thing, can you kind of expound a little bit on what that's going to entail, and will any of this would any of this increase go for that, or is that something that's already built into the budget?
Chair Krupp, Representative Crummell, no, that doesn't address this House Bill 2199 at all. That's another program that we're talking about. It's come out of our budget, and that's just part of our lease management at 31 state-owned airports.
Okay. Follow up with anything?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. Is that something that generally agencies as a whole generally do have consultants do, as opposed to having somebody in-house that looks at leases and properties and that sort of thing?
Yes, Chair Krupp, Representative Trummell. It is very, very common for, and at this point I'm going to compare our agency to other airports because those are the other agencies that administer airport leases. It is very, very common to hire a consultant to develop a lease policy because the policies are so controversial, and it usually requires a third disinterested party's input to develop the policy.
Thank you. Representative Wilkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can see now what this gentleman, Mr. Carter, is talking about from Staff Booth, and he doesn't necessarily support an increase, but what really bothered him was his concern with a state agency use of mandatory taxes to finance a grassroots lobbying campaign for the extension of the state program. I don't approve of that, and so that's why he wrote the letter. He might, otherwise, I have very many letters in support, but this is a serious point. And I
have a question for you. I mean, I also share this concern that this has occurred. Have there not done anything like this before, in previous years?
Chair Krupp, to the best of my knowledge, we haven't. And I have to express to you how sorry I am for the error that I made, and I will take full responsibility for having the poor judgment to send that out. It probably doesn't matter at this point, but I was very, very frustrated with some misinformation that was being widely distributed about the proposal. But I agree it was wrong. It was an incorrect judgment, and I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I didn't receive any of the form letters. What I have received are quite a few letters in support, a couple again, and I don't know from whom that I got the project list that of needs around the state. But I was pretty impressed that all of our airports have deferred maintenance. And Ron Larson, who's before us, is one of my constituents and the manager of the Port of Astoria Airport. And I believe that the need really is real. And when I hear the Pilots Association and the Airport Managers Association coming before us asking for increases, I think that, you know, those are the kinds of things I take more seriously than I do any kind of form letter. So I will continue my support because I think it is important that just as with our other infrastructure and roads and bridges, we maintain what investment we've made thus far and make sure that our airports are safe and preserved.
Thank you. Ron, would you like to go ahead and just take your name first?
Thank you. Ron Larson, Chairman Krupp, other members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to be here today to talk about this a little bit. As Chairman of the Aviation Advisory Committee, I was part of this negotiated process that came up with the numbers that are before you today. Like any negotiation, it is certainly not a perfect solution. As Representative Hill asked the question, it was a very good question. It will not solve all the problems in the state of Oregon immediately, but it is a first step to go towards those problems. Those problems are real. They are problems that every airport in Oregon, as well as many airports throughout the nation, are facing, as a lot of our World War II airports are starting to deteriorate. The money is needed to go to improve and to fix and to do the general maintenance at those airports. This money specifically is there to set aside, to go towards pavements, to go towards maintenance, to keep our system of airports in Oregon operational and safe for the flying public. It is very, very important that we have the money and that we have the funds to be able to do that and look at it as a long-term solution to a long-term problem. I believe the bill has many merits before it, which you are considering. Representative Montgomery is correct in his adversity to possibly the letter, to the letter that went out. I think the director, the interim director, has expressed her concern about that also, but I think it's you as a board need to really take a look at the merits of this bill and not the inappropriate use that can be dealt with in something that is separate. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any other user fee which could be applied to the use of airports in terms of the collected dollars?
Chairman Krupp and Representative Hill, I'm sorry, Amity.
Go ahead.
There is fees that are out there now. Commercial aircraft at most of the airports in Oregon are charged a fee for landing.
There are other types of fees that come at airports, but general aviation is generally not charged at airports throughout Oregon unless they reach a certain weight type limit, which I believe the Port of Portland has tried or is initiating at over 10,000 pound gross landing weight. So there are fees, and those fees are used strictly at the airports, and any fees or revenue that is generated at airports must stay at airports according to FAA rules. So any fee that is there does go towards the use of the airport if that airport has received any type of FAA funds.
Any further questions? Sounds like we need a weight mile tax for airplanes.
A very interesting solution.
I said that tongue-in-cheek, and I meant that tongue-in-cheek, I must say. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Coming forward. Curry Novick, did I say that correctly? Thank you. That's why I have this up here, ma'am. I'm one of the worst offenders, I must say. Thank you for coming, and please
take your name for the record. Thank you. Carrie Novick, I'm the airport manager in Redmond, Oregon. I wasn't prepared to speak, Representative Krupp, but I will anyway. The airports in the state are extremely important for a lot of reasons. We need to keep them up. It's not just for safety. They're economic development. They're economic development partners is what they were, what they are. Redmond serves Central Oregon, and clearly we're one of the fastest-growing airports in the state. As a commercial service airport, we have many different ways of raising revenue that general aviation airports just don't have. They talked about collecting fees at general aviation airports. Some of the small airports in the state don't have anybody there. If they were to attempt to get fees from anybody, it would cost them more to have somebody to do it than it would be to collect the fees. This is one way to make it happen. It's extremely important for the entire state. I was in with a group that worked on the plan, and in front of you here, I have to say I was the one dissenting vote. I didn't agree with the half cent. I thought it should be more. I disagreed that if it was going to be 3 and 3, it should be at least a half cent and a half cent. However, we all have to give in sometimes, and this was the way to move it forward. I think keeping the pavement up in the state is extremely important. If we don't do it, I think you're going to see airports close, some of the small airports. Some of the money can be used to leverage dollars if we can from the FAA, and as you know, the airport pays 10%. The state is like that. If we can leverage it, we get 90% from the FAA. Money is spent locally. It helps improve the airport safety and also the local community, as I said, economic development. It also deals with things like having a place for airlines, you know, to land, which affects, unfortunately, a lot more people than we want. So what I'm asking you to do, I mean, in Redmond alone, if you have $20 million to give me, I could spend it on pavement maintenance alone at Redmond. So Port of Portland is eligible. Their airports are eligible. And I'm asking you to please support this for all the airports in Oregon. It's a little bit of money, but it'll go a very long way.
Thank you, Carrie. Any questions? Representative Locke.
I just want to thank Chair to make a comment. Ms. Novick, I've heard a lot of good things about what you're doing over there in Redmond.
Thank you.
So keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Representative.
And about the half cent, I understand your concern when you talk about 3 plus 3 and
right.
A half plus a half, but we did hear from the Aeronautics Interim Director that $800,000 is generated from the half cent, which only $200,000 is generated by the 3 cents. So that sort of influences me.
Well, remember that half cent is they're making money. I don't think you'll find the gas is any lower in Oregon. And really, what the airlines do, they're not actually buying it from the port. They buy it in enormous bulk because apparently they use a lot of it. They pay to store it there and to have it pumped there. So they pay a lot less for gas than, say, the general aviation pilot does, because they buy a little bit at a time. They have to buy it not in bulk the way the air carriers do. And if you look at what the other states are paying around here, a half a cent is really very little and will have some impact on them, no question about it, but it will have a major impact on what we can do in the state.
Okay. Thank you, Carrie. We appreciate it. We have one more signed up to testify, and we'll be closing public hearing. Roger, would you come forward, please?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I represent Alaska Airlines and the Air Transportation Association, which is the Association of All the Airlines. Frankly, I just love it when I hear somebody that doesn't pay the tax tell me how low the tax is and how it won't hurt at all. And I just can't pass up. You've heard a lot of testimony about why we need this. May I spell for you some realities of life so you know that the arena you're judging this in? Does it really matter what the jet fuel tax is in Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, North and South Dakota? Some of it does because jet airplanes don't go in and out of those places and fuel up as they do in the major states. So when you're making comparisons, you need to make comparisons with places they do come from. And just as an example, there is no tax in the state of Texas, the main terminal for two of the major airlines that fly in and out of Portland. You spent a lot of time in this session talking about a concept called cost responsibility as applied to trucks. You spent endless hours trying to figure out, are truckers paying their fair share and trying to set highway financing based on making them pay their fair share? For a moment, would you consider the same concept when it comes to airlines so you understand what we're talking about right here? The Port of Portland, And you heard this earlier, 95% of all the jet fuel taxes collected in the state of Oregon are paid at PDX, because that's where all the airlines fly in and out of. The Port of Portland doesn't need the jet fuel tax, nor do they need the increase in order to pay for any of the development of any of the Port of Portland airports. The Port of Portland are very capable of collecting through landing fees, gate charges, and other means all the money to expand Portland International Airport and all the money to pay Portland International Airport. We pay 100% of all those costs. You may go to Portland International and think that the port and the taxpayers are paying for the expansion of the airport. They're not. They are paying for the parking structure and the roads in and out. But the airport itself and the terminal expansion is paid for 100% by the airlines without the need for 1 cent of jet fuel tax. So what we're talking about, and remember again, 80% of all the money raised by this bill, presently and in the future, is jet fuel tax. So what we're talking about is trying to fund airport expansion around the state. I would appreciate, at least from the people that have talked before you, that they recognize what they're talking about, because the concept is always given to you as, my God, they pay so little, it ought to be in their heart to pay more. And I've gone to endless meetings of the Air Alliance when this comes up, and the private pilots look at me and say, you cheap so-and-so, you know, you pay the lowest there is. Well, let's talk about how low that is. In the last 3 months, you and I have watched the price of gasoline go up and down. And if you drive up and down this freeway, where do you usually fill your tank? I miss someone in Salem all the time because it's about 10 cents a gallon lower than there's in Portland. Now, I was in Coos Bay representing Raymond over the weekend, and I noticed the prices were the same in Coos Bay as they were here, and actually 10% lower than Portland. I don't know what reason for that, but that's with an automobile with an 18-gallon tank in it. Now, let me ask you for a moment. If you had a 5,000-gallon tank in your vehicle, would you pay attention to where the prices are? Sure you would. Do you know that the price in FCTAC, the net price after all state, federal, and local taxes, is 2.3 cents lower than it is at PDX? Now, they give you the map here, or this little shows you that the jet fuel tax is very high in the state of Washington. They apply their jet fuel only to the amount of fuel burned within the geographic boundary of the state of Washington. So when a jet takes off from CPAC, you pay tax, and there's a formula for figuring this out. You pay tax only on what you burn going out of Washington. Once you hit the border, you don't pay any more tax on it. Secondly, and you need to understand, you, me, and all the people that preceded you as legislators have, for whatever reason, astutely kept any refinery from ever being built in the state of Oregon. So we get all our fuel, gasoline and jet fuel, from somewhere else. And that somewhere else is the Puget Sound area. We pipe down the pipeline all the fuel that comes into Oregon, and that includes all the jet fuel. The cost of transportation never seems to show up on a map like this, and that's the reason that even though the tax itself nominally may be higher in Washington, It is 2.3 cents, and that was as of February 16th, and I'll be happy to check and update that. But as of February 16th, the price of jet fuel is 2.3%, or 2.3 cents. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means one thing. Alaska Airlines have people to work for them that, guess what, are smart enough to figure out where to buy their fuel. And each time you crank up the jet fuel tax in the state of Oregon, if they're more likely. Now, the last person testified said it ought to be 1 cent, not half a cent increase. I just suggest to you that the airlines are very capable of tankering their gasoline. Now, the last time I used that term, tankering, which is what the airlines refer to it, one of the private pilot representatives at Aviation Alliance thought I meant either we fly tankers of gasoline, of jet fuel in here, or we refuel in the air. I don't know what he had in mind. All I'm talking about is you fill your tank in Seattle and you fly to California and never buy any in Oregon. So in this context, and I'm not signed up in opposition to this, I told the airlines in the past that when the Oregon legislature decides to fund all of the transportation programs in the state, there's going to be an increase in fuel tax. So please put it in context. It's not just a simple little thing of, gee, they pay more, they pay less here than everywhere else. We pay more here. And then I hope you'll keep that in mind when you're considering what's coming up in this. 8 parts to 2 parts is what the airlines are already paying, and PDX doesn't need anything to run it. So I would suggest that people try to keep that in mind. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Roger. Any questions? Yes, Representative Walker.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Are you in opposition to this bill?
If I hear any more of the platitudes about how we deserve to pay more, I think the airlines could crank themselves up. I have, Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, I have tried to keep the airlines from being, they'd like to be in opposition, I've tried to keep them neutral. And what I'm saying to you is, when you raise it, at least understand what the context is. The airlines, the commercial airlines, do not need anything that is not all, that we don't already pay for. We don't need to pay a tax to get any service out of it. The majority of what we're talking about is going to go to fund the needs of private pilots. And if you want to look at that map, look at the tax in California compared to the tax in Oregon. And by the way, the registration fee in California is astronomical compared to the registration fee in Oregon for private pilots, which is almost infinitesimal.
I might remind the members of the committee, I'm going to take 2 more questions, representatives, these 2 representatives here, and then we're going to close public hearing. We're not going to work session on this today. We have 2 other bills we need to hear because people have come a distance for those bills. Yes.
I just wanted to ask Mr. Martin, I think that PDX does have some interest in what happens out in those feeder airport. Like, we've currently lost our little commuter service from Astoria, but when we have it, one end of the service that lands at PDX comes from Astoria.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Taylor, I know this argument, and I have a lot of respect for your manager from Astoria, and as he would tell you, the problem that Astoria has, same problem that Salem has, it appears that geographically, if you live within 100 miles of a major airport, it's very difficult to maintain commercial service for the very fact that most people, your constituents, would rather drive to Portland and park their car than go to the Astoria Airport and pay whatever the fee is to fly in. And that just happens that way. That's why Salem doesn't have service and probably never will again. I would have to say to you that, yes, Northwest Horizon Airlines, which is a subsidiary of Alaska Air, does feed into the 7 other airports in the state of Oregon. But honestly, the majority of passengers are not fed in from feeder airlines. They come by car to the Portland International Airport.
Even those who are at a distance greater than 100 miles?
Sure. Granted, North Bend, Medford, Eugene, Redmond, Pendleton all feed into the Portland International Airport. And people coming into Portland go out on those. I recognize that. But many of the funds we're talking about are going to go to airports that don't have any commercial traffic and probably never will again.
A good call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Martin, with regards to the Port of Portland, do they also collect enough or have enough, collect enough in landing fees and that sort of thing to also pay for any improvements that would occur at Troutdale and Hillsborough? Or would Troutdale and Hillsborough fall into the, in other words, would they benefit from this avgas and jet fuel increase?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, that would probably be a question that the representative from the Port of Portland would be better able to answer than I. I would point out that in the negotiations that have been mentioned earlier, Mike Cohen, as director of the Port of Portland, pointed out to the rest of the aviation community that they should be pursuing the landing fees and parking charges and garage charges and so forth that the port collects at both Hillsborough, at Troutdale, and at that forest of an airport in Clackamas County called that the port also maintains. And I love to bring up the subject of your token airport out there at Molina.
Molina, is it?
It's Clackamas County's token from the Port of Portland because it doesn't work and you can't get there from where you and I live. But
okay. You're representing from the port. Would you please come forward quickly and state your name?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Keith Levitt with the Port of Portland. We are supportive of this bill. We, in the past, have had the same concerns as what Mr. Martin articulated. We will be eligible for the new program that's envisioned, and we support it, and the other airports beyond TDX that the port owns and operates would be eligible for the pavement improvements that are envisioned in this.
Okay, any questions? Yes, I'm with
us. Well, I guess I'm wondering how much the Port of Portland would benefit from this and how much the small airports would benefit from this, and I don't know if you would get that, but perhaps the lady that was up here first. If you know, that's fine.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loken, we envision that we'll be eligible for the fund. The plan, though, as I understand it, has not yet been created to develop the priorities for where these funds will be spent. And I think as that gets put forward, the answer to that question will become more clear. And we have supported generally the idea that we support the airports around the state.
Okay, thank you. Keith, Representative.
Thank you. What are the pavement conditions of those burns out, though? Are they good, fair, bad?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, I do not know the answer to that question.
Representative Wells.
Thank you. In the past, there's been debate on how you prioritize the distribution of these funds. Has that issue been settled? Because, as I understand, there isn't necessarily where the fuel is sold. It goes back to those airports. So, what is there going to be a group that works on this to prioritize that? So, how do you come out when you're selling most of the fuel there? Most of the money is raised at Portland. How does this work out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, to my understanding, I've got to admit I came in to this conversation about three or four months ago. A lot of these discussions took place in the interim. My understanding is that as this group puts together the priorities for the program, those issues will be settled. We have had real concern in the past that you see a return back from the tax paid. And I think we'll carry that concern into the next set of discussions that go on with where the project actually gets the funding. But at this point, I might have to defer to the department to see if there's any further discussion that's been on exactly where the prioritization of the funds
goes. Well, Keith, thank you very much. We're not going to have any further discussion on this matter. We are, however, going to entertain very quickly a conceptual amendment if someone so proposes in regards to promoting Representative Loken.
Sure, I believe you'd need to go to work session to do that.
Okay, then we're not going to go to work session on this bill at this time. Public hearing is closed on 2199. And we're going to change the order just briefly. We have some folks who traveled the distance for House Bill 2081. We're going to open hearing on that right now. And Janet, would you please go ahead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2081 had a number of things in it that have been taken out by the Dash 3 amendments that are at your place. And so I'm going to discuss what the Dash 3 amendments do. They increase registration fees by $10 for vehicles that are registered in high-growth counties, and those would be the four counties of Clackamas, Multnomah, Washington, and Marion counties that have individually at least 10% of the state's population growth since 1980. That would begin on January 1st, 2001. The sunset on that increase would be in December 31st, 2007. Also, it establishes the Eastern Oregon Federal Forest Safety Net account and allocates up to $3 million to 12 counties that received federal funds in 1996 from a number of federal forests. That safety net account is sunsetted on July 1st, 2007. It also, the bill increases the county share of the special city county allotment, and that's for counties that receive the least state and federal highway revenue per mile, from $500,000 to $1 million a year, and the state highway fund share of that same special county allotment from $250,000 to $500,000. Those are both doubled. It does a similar doubling of the city and state share for the special cities program, and that's based on cities both the cities under 5,000 population. Mr. Chair, this measure does have a subsequent referral to revenue as well. Thank you.
Okay, Janet, for the benefit of the committee, we're going to hear this bill. We're going to hold ourselves over slightly over at 10 minutes after 10. We'll complete all of our hearings for the day. So that leaves us 20 minutes to complete. Let's keep that in mind in terms of our questions. If we have to hear these bills again, we will certainly do so. Mr. Chair.
Is it correct that this bill goes on to revenue after we hear?
That's right. You'll have to have subsequent report.
And maybe they can briefly give us a presentation.
We have three witnesses, Laura, Judge Laura and Bill, and David. Want you all come forward?
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties, and with me today is familiar face, Judge Laura Pryor. Judge Pryor is the chair of our Transportation Committee, the committee that has developed this county priority that's before you this morning, House Bill 2081. This bill was introduced on our behalf by the House Interim Task Force on Transportation. We appeared several times before that committee and presented the problems, road financing problems that you've heard previously, and the committee agreed to present this bill. The revenue-raising provisions in House Bill 2081 have basically been addressed in a bill previously passed by this committee, House Bill 2082. And so the amendments would basically just focus on the city and county special programs that your committee administrator described just a few minutes ago. It does have a subsequent referral to House Revenue, and our request this morning is that you act favorably on this bill and send it on to House Revenue. With that, let me turn to Judge Pryor. For some comments, and then Mr. Barenberg, and if there are questions about the amendments or the bill itself, I'd be happy to respond.
Thank you, Judge Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laura Pryor, and I'm the county judge from Dillon County, Oregon. And all of you have heard us make our presentation before, so I'll try to be brief. The three pieces that we have before you in these amendments, we think are so important that we cannot let go of them. We've got to try to keep working these three pieces. And you have heard me say before, and I will say again, that the most important reason that these pieces are before you has to do with the population list that is attached onto your packet. Anytime I'm before you, you're probably going to see that population list, because within that list are the inherent problems that face yourselves and face all of the counties and the cities when we're trying to talk about taking care of an integrated system. How do you do that across this state with counties that go from 500,000 to counties that go to 2,000? That is an incredible problem all by itself. The cities have the same problem, and their representative is here to speak to that. The three pieces that we have, the piece of the Eastern Oregon counties that are falling off the map with respect to timber because they didn't get an owl guarantee, and they've had tremendous problems out there in their forests. The piece is for the small counties and the small cities that help them keep the doors open. And the piece for this side of the state that really addresses congestion are three pieces that go directly back to that population list. They also passed out to a packet that you, I believe you've had before, where the counties went through trying to figure out what were the six pieces that impact us the worst in this last decade. It has to do with population growth, the existence of that county system that's connected to the state system, the issues with timber, the weather that we've had through the last decade, all of that combining to put us where we are today without any increase in the revenues. So with that, I will turn this over to Dave Gerenberg from the cities, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Laura, one of the questions that comes up when you deal with counties and road funds is there are counties out there that have reserves for transportation needs. And in fact, I believe there are some counties that have reserves, all kinds of money for roads and highways, and they're cutting the heck out of other programs because they can use that funds. Do you have a list of the counties and what road reserves they have? And when you talk about needs, do you try to incorporate that in? I mean, some of them are going to lose those reserves as the timber tax dollars, but they're in pretty good shape right now. Is there a way to accommodate that in any kind of needs-based distribution system? Or do you simply give the money out on an equal footing, even to some counties that have money in the bank for roads and really don't need it for that in that regard?
Okay, I'll try very quickly to answer your question, Representative Lehman, and then I'll turn it over to Bill because I'm sure he wants to make a comment about this. Chairman Krupp, Representative Lehman, what you have before you is our way of trying to address that problem within the context of what we thought the legislative body in the 6 months that you have to come together would be able to deal with. The counties that have timber revenue reserves have those reserves because that's the way the laws are written, and they can't do anything about that. So they're kind of trapped right now. Whether you want to find a way to deal with that would be something we'd probably have to look at outside of what we're doing right now, because I don't know if we've got the time left to do that. The answer is yes, it probably could be done. How we would do it with 2 months left, I don't know. This is what we have. What you have before you is how the county tried to deal with that. That's probably not a very good answer, Representative, at that point.
Chairman Krupp, Representative Lehman, just to add just a couple of points to that. Judge Pryor is correct. This is a step that we've tried to incorporate to deal with that. Several of the counties that have larger reserves are on the west side that are benefiting from the spotted owl guarantee. When that ends in 2003, revenues that are at a level today of $60 million will drop by two-thirds to three-fourths when they have to shift to what is actually being harvested. So those reserves are there to kind of help them then continue that gradual decline in receipts that we have under the spotted owl guarantee. So I think that's the reason they're holding those reserves today, is in anticipation of 2003.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. First, I'd just like to add on to what my colleagues from the counties had to say, that the amount of money for that $6 million for safety net comes out of the top, off the top, so there's a share of it that comes out of the city allocation, and we agreed with that because of the work the counties did, having come in with a much bigger number to start with and then honing it down to
to targeting it to address the real problem in the counties that were most affected and figuring in sending down reserves and other things. So we thought that, you know, wanted to complement our county partners in terms of trying to define down the problem just in the legislation or amendment that's before you to only those that are most in need. Just to also, and I think that this fits into the discussion that continues going around with HB 2082, the funding bill that you passed out, in terms of trying to address the issue of, you know, how do you do the split between the partners, and it's a good part of that discussion and a good additional vehicle to put into the mix. Just to briefly, and I think I don't know if I said this, I'm Dave Barenberg, with the League of Oregon Cities. Sorry, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, what I handed out on this sheet with a list of cities was the first two sheets are the last 2 years' worth of the small city grant, which is a grant of $25,000 that's from a fund of $1 million, half from the city share, half from the Department of Transportation, that cities under 5,000 can apply for. And attached to it, going beyond, is all the applications for 99 and 98, and just what the projects were. And you can see a significant number of communities weren't able to access the funds. And this pot of funds is extremely important to smaller communities that have a hard time accumulating enough funding just to do an overlay of a block or two or what have you. And what is included in the amendment before you would double the size of the program, which would allow us to raise from the grants from $25,000 level currently to $50,000. $25,000 doesn't buy what it did 10 years ago. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You said, I'm prepared to move this on to revenue, but if it does get out of this committee, it needs an awful lot of work over there. For example, on the amendments, Multnomah County should give priority to the Willamette River. My friends, Sandy River is in Multnomah County. We got an old bridge over Troutdale. You don't even want to drive over that with your kids. I'm tired of Multnomah County thinking Portland is Multnomah County. We have East County, and that will have to be changed before I ever support it on the floor. But I think the neat thing needs to move forward and realize that there's more to Oregon than Portland. Okay, we have one. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't answer Representative Lehman's question. We do have a list, and we can make it available to you.
Okay, thank you all very much. We have one more individual signed to testify, Bob McKellar. Could you come forward, Bob? And for the benefit of the committee, we will move into work session on this bill momentarily. Thank you, Bob. Would you take your name, please?
Good morning. My name is Bob McKellar. I represent the Forest Products Transportation Association. I would just like to encourage the committee. I'm neither here in favor of nor opposed to this bill, but I would like to encourage the committee to identify the impact on the trucking industry of any bills such as this one. I haven't seen the Dash 3 amendments, but if they're like everything else I've seen, they're blank. And I'd like to see the blanks filled.
The blanks are filled, I believe. Janet?
Wonderful. Then may I see them, please?
Certainly so.
Okay. I'll look at them in the back of the room.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. For both of our county members, Janet has a question for you. Come forward again quickly, please.
I had a question about the registration fee, the $10 registration fee. The amendments in 2080 that raised the registration fee, just raised the registration fees for passenger vehicles. But this bill refers to 803-420, which includes a lot of other kinds of vehicles. And I didn't know if you intended it to just be passenger vehicles.
This 420-421 over here, and that's the passenger there.
Sub 1, yeah.
Sub 1, that's your passenger. That's what's there.
Right here. Right,
420. 421 is just the current $30 registration fee.
On line, page 3 of the amendment, line 20,
well, that refers to that whole section, but it has a limitation to 420.
I've been helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm also concerned in terms of Washington County is one of those counties that would qualify under this in terms of the limited loaded vehicles, passenger cars in terms of where the highest propensity of vehicles are to be legal, but there's other vehicles in terms of the traverse the same road in terms of why would we not apply it $10 across the board? Not that much, not going to be, it's not going to break anybody, because they're all contributing to the wear and tear on the road. And, you know, when you talk about cost responsibility, why would we not apply it evenly across all vehicles that are registered within the county?
Chair, Representative Hill, this is where the counties and their own deliberations among themselves started. And what we feel we put before you is a base. Now, if the legislative body would like to go beyond that base, I'm not sure you'd get a big argument out of the counties. But this is what we thought was the minimum we needed to try to keep everybody's head above water.
Yes. Just briefly in terms of on the discussion here, what can I expect, I guess, you know, from the Department of Transportation, the affected counties, and the cities and the affected counties shall agree on a process for the distribution of monies under the section and on amounts to be distributed to each county. So if my city does not agree, then no monies are distributed?
On the distribution, Chairman Krupp, Representative Hill, yes, basically a city could preclude the distribution of those funds. It's been our experience, however, that generally they're able to work through those issues and arrive at some kind of an agreement. But as you'll note in that section, those funds go to the county area, and the county then is responsible for bringing the ODOT of the cities and the county together in discussion on how those funds are to be used. So funds could go to city streets, funds could go to state highways in addition to county facilities. But you're correct, an individual entity could have a veto on how the revenue was expended.
Yes, Paul. And just on subsection 3, why was that included in here? Why would we call out the bridges? Is that because Beth Stein held a press conference and talked about how much of the money we spent? Or is that something that the Association of Oregon Counties decided that it was vehemently important that the $10 registration be collected in Multnomah County be spent on bridges crossing the Lenape River?
Sheriff Krupp, Representative Hill, this was an issue that was a part of the funding package in the 97 legislative session, and that priority was one that was brought to the Association by the four counties that were dealing with this issue. Mm-hmm. And the bridges across the Willamette River in the city of Portland, for the most part, are county bridges. One obvious exception is the interstate bridge, but those are county bridges, and they are in very dire need of improvement. So Multnomah County did not want those bridges to be overlooked, and so they brought that as a priority for Multnomah County, basically in agreement with the cities in Multnomah County. One more.
So if I really complain hard, I can get my priority listed in here as something, not that we'll spend it on it, but just it'll just say Washington County shall give priority to a overpass on the sunset at Jackson School Road. That would be inappropriate in addition to this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, I'm sure whatever you would like to do as a legislator would probably be accepted by your body. All we've done is brought to you what the counties in consultation arrived at.
All right, Representative Wells.
I think where this bill could affect the trucking industry, and I don't know how it would be under the allocation when you raise the registration fees, how does that affect the weight mile currently that we have? And how is that allocated out when it's only collected in four or five counties? That whole formula there.
Yes, Chair Krupp, Representative Wells. That's a good question for a legislative revenue office. My response is
that there would not be an adjustment in the weight mile because that would be a localized or regional increase. There would be no additional adjustment. And I think that the latest cost allocation study indicates that the percentage of truck responsibility on the city and county system is somewhat lower than what it is on the total system. But that is a question that would need to be addressed to legislative revenue.
Okay, thank you. One more quick question, and then we're done. Question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Just for clarification, we have been considering another bill dealing with gas tax and vehicle registration fees. This is separate from that, as far as the registration fee considered in the other one, mm-hmm. in case that one.
Chair, Representative Loken, that is correct.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Bill, thank for your testimony. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2081. Open up the work session. Now open. Representative Hill.
I move a dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2081.
Amendments to the dash 3 have been moved. Do we have the session? If none, any objections to adopting the dash 3? Dash 3 is still adopted. Representative Hill.
Move House Bill 2081 as amended to the Committee on Revenue without a recommendation.
The bill has been moved to Revenue without a recommendation. Is there any opposition to that?
What?
Chairman.
Yes, give a session, please.
Is Representative Hill does he clearly want to do it without recommendation, or would a positive recommendation be more?
Clearly without recommendation, I think that if, we're not going to have the opportunity to work the bill here, and I think there's some specific issues in there that I personally don't like. I like the concept. I'm not opposed to the concept in terms of it, but I think it doesn't have what I would call when it needs my vote.
Mr.
Chairman, I concur with that. I don't have any problems with the bill, but you know, I don't think our objective here is to really work this bill and look at it. I think it's probably appropriate to put it on to be worked for revenue.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Not wanting to cause this bill any constitutional problem, I'm going to vote for it without recommendation.
Okay, that's your vote.
Mr. Chair, I would much prefer to send this to revenue with a due pass recommendation and let them work it. If they don't want to pass it, they won't.
What's the pleasure of the committee before we all
vote? That's the pleasure of the committee.
Mm-hmm. Walker.
I'm going to vote send it on, but without a recommendation because I haven't had enough time to process the bill. So I'll pass it on.
Clerk, call the roll, please.
Representative Nevin.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Aye.
Reluctantly, aye.
Representative
Lincoln.
Aye. Reluctantly, aye.
Representative
Hill.
Aye.
Representative
Walker.
Aye.
Representative Lincoln. Yes. House Bill 2081 is subsequently referred to revenue. I want to thank you all. We're going to briefly open up a hearing on SB 108, and we are going to have Judge Pryor come forth first. After Senate Bill 108 hearing is now open, and because she has to go, and then we will have two other individuals testify. The first individual is on the list, which is Chuck Bennett and John Helm, and then we will close today's hearing. Judge Pryor, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the recommending the bar partner, Gillen County Judge. And this time I'm up here just as the Gillen County Judge, representing just myself and my county. I'm not representing the thoughts or wishes of the Association of Warren County. I'm here because I think this bill brings forth an issue that should have been addressed and should be addressed somehow by this body. And that whole issue is around multimodal transportation. I think some time ago, this legislative body, many years past, began taking the state down a road where the modes were being moved out of the Department of Transportation. If that wasn't true, the maritime ports would not now be outside of ODOT. What you have left within ODOT is two people in the railroad section who do yeoman's work and can't really prevent any of the things that have happened in rail in the state of Oregon in the last 10 years. To their best efforts, there has been no focus and there has been very little support to try to help those people stop what's happened with the abandonments. Now you have the aviation folks coming forward, and they are trying to make the same case that the maritime ports made, and that was that they need to be outside of ODOT to be a freestanding organization on their own. This legislative body in both houses have been looking at, for two sessions, transportation, i.e. roads, streets and roads, and those issues, and really focusing on that. I would submit to you that there's a much larger issue in this state, and that has to do with the whole discussion around multimodal. And do we have a multimodal system anywhere outside of Portland? And my suggestion to you is probably not. And I'm just going to raise the question, is that something that somebody should be talking about? From the east side of the state, I've got to tell you, yes, I believe that firmly. And if moving this outside of ODOT is going to help that discussion in some way, then I say certainly you should do it. But is just keeping it inside going to move that discussion forward? I don't think so.
Okay, thank you, Judge Pryor. I'm not going to take any questions of this witness at this time. For the benefit of the committee members and everyone in the room, we will hear this bill again. I can assure you, and there will be plenty of time to do so. John and Chuck, would you come forward briefly, please? Thank you. Is Paul Meyerhoff here? Paul, would you also come forward briefly, since you're from Eugene? We don't have to make another trip back up here, please. Chuck, would you lead off?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Oregon Aviation Coalition. We're here in support of Senate Bill 108A. I submitted to you written testimony and the copy of the legislative fiscal impact statement on Senate Bill 108A. I'm just going to run through very briefly what the bill does and leave to you to read my advocacy statement for the bill. SB 108A recreates the Department of Aviation and the Oregon Board of Aeronautics. The board consists of five members appointed by the governor and subject to confirmation by the Senate. The director is appointed by the board and, again, I believe, confirmed by the Senate. The new agency would be specifically charged with administering the laws of the state concerning aviation, representing the interests of aviation system users when other government agencies' decisions will affect those interests, administering the agency and its personnel, and overseeing aviation-related construction, reconstruction, and improvements. I think the highlight of the fiscal statement is that this is a money saver. It saves this new department $44,382 the first biennium, $108,764 the second biennium, and it is as a result of savings on the administrative overhead charges against the agency charged by the Oregon Department of Transportation. I also want to mention that we are in support of the Dash 2 amendments being presented by Lone Star Northwest. We view those as friendly amendments. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chuck. And we will probably have to have you back at a later date. You're in this building all the time, so we will look forward to hearing more from you. John, please.
I have nothing to add at this time, Mr. Chair. I'll defer to Mr. Marino.
Okay, Paul, thank you.
Chairman Krupp and members of the committee, my name is Paul Meyerhoff, and I'm Director of Corporate Development for the PAPE Group in Eugene, Oregon. We own FlightCraft, one of our member companies, which is the largest fixed base operator, FBO. We primarily service corporate aircraft in and out of the state of Oregon. I'm here to support Senate Bill 108A and to urge you to do the same, please. The issue is one of effectiveness. The one is one of representing adequately the aviation interests in the state. We believe this bill does that. Some might call it an experiment. We think it's an experiment worth trying in aviation. In order for our organizations, the pilots, the users in this state, to adequately have the opportunity to focus on the aviation issues, the airport issues, the issues in the air, the issues on the ground, which we detailed in testimony and in other talks. So I know you're on a time deadline, and I would also ask that if you have additional questions, I'd be happy to come back as well.
Okay. We want to thank you all very much. We will indeed have, I'm sure, additional questions. We will certainly have a great deal more to talk about this issue, both for and against.
We, I believe, are going to try to schedule another hearing on this bill, SB108, on Monday.
Perhaps you will all be notified of that. Thank you very much for coming. House Bill, Senate Bill 108 is hearing is closed. Thank you. Have a good day. And we're going to adjourn the meeting.
And our rookie.
Okay.
Without objection.
Hi, John. I got a friend who let me change.
It's staff. They should have had you when we had the state bill.
Boy, I would have really gotten myself in trouble that time, John.
I'm wrong, John.
Yeah, I hate to make you drive back down here again.
Well, too much to do. I wanted to, meet a couple people in here.